AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Julie Douglas.
Julie, I'm growing concerned. I'm growing concerned for our dear mailbot, Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been calling him over a lot recently. Our own schedules have been crazy. We've been covering some topics that have gone a bit long here and there, and for various reasons, he just remains over in his corner. The mail is piling up around him, and I'm beginning to notice some unhealthy behavior in this secluded mechanoid.
Are you talking about the droppings?
Yeah, that's one thing that's happening, yes.
Yeah, and he's resting a little bit.
He is.
Yeah, so we're going to take the oil can out today, and we're going to have a little bit of listener mail that has built up, and we're going to make Arnie feel a little bit better,
yeah,
I think, in the process.
I think so. And as a byproduct, we'll also be able to catch up on some great listener mail. We receive so many great responses on Facebook through our email address. Most of it is wonderful, and yet we're so busy and the time is so limited, we don't really get to respond as much as we'd like. We don't get to share as much on the podcast as we would like.
So today's the day. We are going to cover this listener mail, and let's bring on over Arnie.
Hey there, Arnie. What have you got for us? What have you got for us today? You got some good ones that you've been building up? All right, fair enough. This first one comes to us from Facebook, and it comes from listener Justin. Justin says, "Hey, Robert and Julie, just wanted to say that I really enjoyed your Ouroboros podcast today. However, I'm extremely disappointed that a couple of fantasy nerds like you, or at least Robert seems to be, didn't mention Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series. If you haven't heard it, there are 14 books, about 500 to 1,000 pages each, so these books are a significant investment in time, but I couldn't recommend them more. The Ouroboros plays a strong role, being both the symbol of the Wheel of Time, which drives this fantasy world through repeating ages, and the symbol of the main magic users throughout the novels. Again, the series is a major investment of your time, but the payoff is well worth it. If you guys haven't read them yet, I would highly recommend it. Thanks for the great podcast. You have no idea how much it helps my commute and the more mundane parts of my day." Justin. So there you go. Yeah, The Wheel of Time. It's a book series I've long been aware of, but as time goes by, I feel like I'm ever against the idea of engaging in yet another long and or unfinished fantasy series.
I know. Don't you feel like that you've got so much stuff in the way of books or even like television series or movies that are stacking up there?
Yeah. It's like I know it's great. I hear it's great. But I don't know that I have time in this lifetime for it. We'll see. Maybe I'll catch a prison sentence at some point, and then I can throw myself a wheel of time.
Oh, you're not wishing that upon yourself,
right?
No,
I'm not wishing it at myself. It's a consolation prize. It's like, oh, somehow I wound up in prison, but at least there's wheel of time.
Well, okay. All right. So I hope that you have some other way of obtaining time. But the Arbaras, in case you guys out there did not catch that one, that was about the snake biting its tail episode. And that was, we covered the symbolic aspects of that.
Yeah, that's one of those episodes where briefly into the research, we didn't think there was enough there to constitute a full episode. We're like, maybe there's just not enough here. This is more of a blog post. But then we doubled down. We researched some more, and we started finding all these crazy scientific or philosophical aspects of the subject matter.
Yeah, and even a robotic aspect of it as well.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's hear from Frances. She posted this on Facebook. It says, I loved this episode, though when I tried explaining the mother having her nephews to some friends at a get-together, they thought I had been doped into some urban legend. Where can I get my hands on more evidence so I can score my told-you-so moment? Well, Frances, thank you for letting us know about that. It is not an urban legend, but it has all the elements of it, right? You have this mother who had three sons, two of which had been tested to see if they might be a good donor for her, and found that genetically they did not match. And so it was found that she actually absorbed her twin, which means that the twin's cellular material was passed on to two of her sons. So, all right, there's a study by Margot Kreskel, and it is called Disputed Maternity Leading to Identification of Tetragametic Chimerism. So anybody else out there who pulled this one off at a cocktail party and you need some backup, that is the name of the study.
There you go. Print it out. Bring it
with
you.
Pass it around.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to read a 10-page paper at a cocktail party.
It's an instant conversation starter, and if you're looking to score some romance, no better way.
Yeah, and don't let anybody skip down to the summary. That's just cheating.
No. Yeah.
I also wanted to mention, and I mentioned this in our last episode, the episode of Microchimera was suggested by listener Shauna, and I wanted to thank her again because I don't think that I mentioned this in the actual episode, and she is the reason why we can all sit back and think about these dastardly things going on in us cellularly, whether or not maybe one of a sibling's cells are dwelling within us. So thank you, Shauna.
Cool. All right. Well, Arnold, what else do you have for us? Yeah? Oh, yeah. Well, that sounds like a good one. Let me see that one.
Oh, Arnold.
This one comes to us from Camilla. And this is a response to our episode on staring. And Camilla works in China, which was actually really helpful for me right before my wife and I traveled to China on our adoption trip, because I got to run a couple of questions past her about, you know, sort of cultural things before we left. So Camilla writes in and she says, great stuff on the staring episode. I loved Julie's stare down with a 7-year-old, mainly because I'm guilty of that myself. As you know, living in small town China, particularly small town with very few foreigners, I got a lot of stares for being not Chinese. Not only stares, but pointing, commenting, people nudging each other and pointing out that there's a Laowa on the bus. I'm sure I completely butchered the Mandarin. I'm not even sure it's Mandarin because I'm not sure what part of China she's in, but I'm sure I butchered it. She continues, after the novelty wears off, it can get quite annoying. So one day on the bus, this 7-year-old turns completely around and starts to stare at me. We're not talking about subtle here. She was less than a foot away and was looking straight at me for at least 2 minutes, which seems like a very long time when you're being stared at. Usually I would just ignore it. They've probably never seen a foreigner before, so let them soak it up. But that persistent stare is just too enervating. So I decided to let her know how it feels. I start staring back, and almost immediately she backs down. I could see in her eyes how uncomfortable she felt. And I go out on a limb here and say that that's how most people feel like when they're being stared at. Very uncomfortable. Like your personal space has been invaded, even from a distance. So there you go. That's some interesting insight into the experience of staring.
I also feel better about
staring
having to stare off with a 7-year-old. So thank you, Camilla.
You know, and I knew from Camilla, and just from general reading of, prior to our travel to China, that there would be a lot of stairs,
mm-hmm.
particularly when we were in Nanning, where there are certainly foreigners, huge city, 7 million people, I believe, but there are fewer foreigners. And so we did receive a lot of stares there, and it's just sort of culturally more okay
mm-hmm.
to stare at strange giant Westerners with blonde hair. And at first it was okay. You know, I knew what was going on. I knew culturally what the deal was. So I'm like, all right, it's fine. I'm an outsider. I look weird. I'm only going to look weirder.
You're a tall outsider.
Yeah.
With, I don't know, are they bluey eyes?
Greeny
bluey,
eyes.
Greeny, and then kind of blondish hair. So,
yeah. So, and you know, my wife too, we both got a lot of stares. But early on, it was fine. We realized what was happening. But as the trip progressed, I found that it kind of grated on me more and more. Not
mm-hmm.
that I was like actively getting angry about it, like stop staring at me or anything, but I felt more and more like I wanted to hide somewhere or go somewhere where people wouldn't be staring. Even though it's not like I didn't feel safe. I felt safe the entire time I was in
mm-hmm.
China, but it just kind of begins to irritate you more and more. Not even irritate you, just make you feel.
Did you feel objectified, like sort of like less than human, or
no? It's just, well, maybe in a sense, like in an unconscious sense, like you just reach the point where you just don't want to be stared at anymore,
mm-hmm.
like for just non-formulated reasons. You're just like I just want to be me, and be privately me somewhere, and not looked at as an outsider.
So when you got back to the States, though, were you so used to being stared at? Were you like, hey, what's going on? I'm right here, guys.
I guess it was, in a way, it's nice to be on MARTA and just be ignored. I don't know. It's just nice to be ignored. But it was a great experience, too, and to realize, to help realize what it's like for people who get stares everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
People who, you know, are either say unnaturally tall, unnaturally short, or mm-hmm. there's something about them. You know, maybe they're just, you know, the racial inversion of my situation,
mm-hmm.
where they, you know, they find themselves, you know, surrounded by a bunch of, you know, tall, pale, white people, and it's
mm-hmm.
and they are the outsider, and
right.
it feels weird. So it was a great experience in that it does give me more insight. I feel into what it's like in other people's
to be
shoes.
The other, yeah.
But as Camilla suggested, my wife a few different times said that she would just stare back at someone who was staring at her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, well, if they're staring at me, it gives me full license to stare at them. But I was always too awkward to do that. It's like because I know they don't actually want to be stared at, so I'm not going to give them what I'm feeling, you know?
And then you have to engage in their souls if you do that.
Yeah, I don't want to make eye contact with anyone anyway, so.
All right, we get another email on staring. This is from Vic. And he said, I enjoyed your recent podcast on the science of staring. As a poker player, you can imagine that there's quite a bit of staring as a group of guys sit around a small table playing cards for hours on end. Many of these guys posturing to be the alpha male at the table.
Uh-huh.
After either having made a bet or perhaps facing a bet, players exhibit a variety of stares. Some stare blankly at the cards in the middle of the table, trying not to give away any tells, while others choose to stare down their opponent. While their conscious minds try to determine if they're beat or being bluffed, their unconscious emotional minds are always on the lookout for hints as well. After listening to your podcast, I tried this little experiment. I had a particularly strong hand, and on the river, once all the cards had been dealt, I raised my opponent. He had the most chips at the table and was embracing the alpha male role at the table that afternoon. While deciding whether to call my raise or fold, he stared at me. I was looking at the center of the table, trying not to give off any signals that might help him, but I decided that I would stare back at him, but only for a second or two, and then only very meekly. I looked into his stare, looked away, then back, and quickly back at the center of the table. Certainly, an alpha male would not want to be bluffed out of a sizable pot. He may have, in fact, logically come to the correct conclusion that he was beat, but not wanting to back down from what may have appeared as a weaker stare from his opponent, he called. He called his hand, I suppose, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I found most interesting was that as he was pushing his chips into the pot, he actually said, I know I'm beat, but I just have to call. I showed him my hand, and he quietly folded his cards. I may continue to use the staring tactic from time to time when facing who I perceive as the alpha male at the poker table when I'm holding what I think is the winning hand. Thanks to Stuff to Blow the Mind for this valuable bit of science. By the way, I vote no to abbreviating the as TH. Keep up the great work.
I love it. See, you listen to the podcast
mm-hmm.
and it improves your gambling. It improves your
yes.
ability. Well, and on a less, hilarious sense, it helps you better navigate the world because you're a little more aware about what's going on.
I love that he was like, I'm identifying the alpha male. Mm-hmm. I'm going to trick him into this sort of weak stare.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to take all of his money.
The alpha male stare thing is weird and is the worst. Like, I far prefer the outsider stare than the alpha male stare. I certainly didn't get any weird alpha male stare stuff going on when I was in China.
As a side note, I recently saw that there was a study that said that men with wider faces appear to be more aggressive. But I wonder if that's a staring thing. Like, if it's the staring just seems more pronounced.
Huh.
Anyway, it's something that I shall check into.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have some more listener mail here with our robot friend.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back. What else do you have for us, Arnold? I know you have a lot of mail there. Do you have some other tantalizing bits of correspondence to share? Oh, here's one. This one comes to us from Jesse. Jesse's responding to some of our hell-related content that has come out over the years, and we've done quite a bit of it. A lot of that's my fault, but we've talked about the science of hell. We've talked about the problem of hell from more of a philosophical, sociological standpoint. And, of course, we did that whole series on the seven deadly sins. So hell pops up frequently, and I often talk about Dante. So Jesse writes in from Sydney, Australia, and says, "Hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time emailer. I really enjoyed the recent episodes in hell and was reminded of this fantastic song by a New Jersey metal band, Iced Earth. The song is about 14 minutes long and is full of melody, complexity, and, well, metal. It conveys a sense of journey and mystery, and I challenge you to listen to it without headbanging. I hope you enjoy it as much as I have now over a decade." I include a YouTube link, but again, you can just search for Iced Earth and hopefully find this particular track. So it was interesting because I love any kind of situation where a topic that we've covered collides with music in any shape or form.
All right. So you got your hell on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think I was headbanging a little, you know?
I thought I saw you at your desk doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty sure.
I've taught the toddler to headbang a little bit.
How's that going?
Pretty good. He'll do it in the car. You know, the booty dancing came naturally to him. There's like
it always does.
Yeah, but I had to sort of show him that this is what you do if we're playing Black Sabbath in the car, that you're supposed to move your head, and he seems to catch on. Yeah.
All right.
See, maybe we should do an episode on the science of headbanging. What is that about? Mosh pits. What's that about? There's a whole like world of metal, and face melting that needs to be researched.
And you know, how about the hair? The physics of the hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, how is the headbanging different between the long hair and the shaved head? Like, those are the two extremes. You don't see a lot of headbanging in the realms
you
between.
You don't.
Yeah.
I mean, how much momentum does that hair create anyway?
Yeah, which is better. And what are the long-term health effects? See?
There's something there.
There's something
there.
And I
bet you anyway there's a study. Bet you donuts to dollars.
Yeah. All right, here we have another one. When we were talking about hell, we brought up the Buddhist hell theme park in Singapore. And since our listeners are based all over and travel all over, inevitably we had a couple of different listeners write in about it. We heard from Chen and we heard from Yong about the theme park. And they both sent us a bunch of pictures. Here are just a couple of quick excerpts. Chen writes in and says, "Hi, I'm a listener from Singapore. I recently became a huge fan of the show thanks to Neptina, my girlfriend. Recently, while I was sandwiched between sad, disgruntled office workers on my way to work, I was listening to the episode called Symbols on the Brain. And being from Singapore, your mentioning of the hell theme park caught my attention immediately. That is not to say I paid no attention to the rest of the podcast. I remember visiting Ha Par Villa when I was about 7 years old. Boy, did it leave an impression. The Ten Courts of Hell was and continues to be the main attraction of the now defunct theme park. As a kid, I wrongfully assumed that I was going to see animatronic dragons at this part of the park, since the Ten Courts of Hell attraction was located inside a 60-foot-long dragon back then. After coming out of the place, I had bedwetting nightmares for 2 weeks straight. So, the Ten Courts of Hell work something like that. The first court of hell is basically the courtroom, and it is believed that you go there when you die. There, a judge called King Quinyong will conduct a preliminary trial based on your past deeds. The good people get to go, get to pass on to the new life, while the bad people will be assigned to different courts of hell. In subsequent courts, things get a little interesting. For example, robbers are thrown into a volcanic pit. Prostitutes are thrown into a pool of blood and drowned, and ungrateful people have their hearts torn out. Drug addicts and tomb raiders, on the other hand, get tied to a red-hot copper pillar and burned alive. Other forms of punishments include being thrown onto a hill of knives, sawed in half, thrown into a pot of boiling oil, dismemberment, crushed under boulders, etc. In Ha Par Villa itself, you will see every court of hell in detail, complete with miniature clay figurines being tortured for your or lack of better words, viewing pleasure. Of course, Ha Par Villa is way more than that. Ha Par Villa was built in the 1930s by Ah Boon Ha, a wealthy businessman who loved his younger brother very much. Boon Ha grew up a firm believer of Eastern ideologies and values, while his younger brother leaned always to the West. To remind his younger brother of his roots, Boon Ha built a theme park filled with Chinese mythology, stories, and symbols. The Ten Courts of Hell is merely one of the many attractions in this theme park. There you will also see traditional Chinese mythologies brought to life via statues. In fact, speaking of symbols, the entire park has a lot of circular motifs built right into the architecture. From the top, you will see that the park is circular, which is supposed to symbolize harmony and the importance of family, a point which the elder brother wanted the younger brother to remember. Ha Par Villa gained a rather unsavory reputation over the years due to the grotesque nature of its exhibits and the fact that the statues were never crafted very well in the first place. Still, even though not very many people bother to visit it these days, it's one of those places that's so bad it's good. You just have to see it to believe it. Anyway, you guys are one of the very few podcasts I listen to. Keep up the great work. I love your show."
Wow, we got an inside tour of that.
Yeah.
It is so, I mean, that's whet my appetite for it even more.
Yeah, and I like how he drew out that there's a lot more to it than just, the pictures that may filter through to Western viewers. If I ever get the chance to be in the same vicinity of it, I would go.
Oh, yeah. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
All right. What other fresh hell do you have for us?
We also heard from another listener. This one came from Yong, talking about the Buddhist hell, and he just wanted to mention that it was created by the founders of Tiger Bomb, and that when it was built in 1937, it was originally called Tiger Bomb Gardens, but was changed to its current name in 1988 by the Tourism Board. It says it's free to enter for anyone, and there's even a subway station in front of it. It must have run out of funds or something, because when I visited, it was in a state of disrepair, which might actually have helped enhance the creepy nature of the place. The areas show different levels or areas of hell and how sinners are punished in various graphic and gory ways. It's an interesting place to go for anyone visiting Singapore, if not for the creepy abandoned theme park experience, then for the educational value. And then he includes a number of images, which were all fabulous. I love how he mentions that the rundown aspect of it made it all the more creepy, because as an Atlanta resident, reminds me of the old what was the ride at Six Flags Plantation Mountain?
Oh, Monster Plantation.
Yes,
one of my favorite rides.
Yeah, and I understand they've redone it, and it's they probably ruined it in the process. Just my opinion, because it used to be awesome in the fact that it was falling apart, and then there was this musty stench in the air, and there was, when you go through Monster Plantation,
Gothic setup, by the way.
Yeah, which is already a little weird, and it's a plantation where there are monsters, and the first part of it is happy, and then there's like a scary part, and then
you're on a boat.
Yeah, and you're on a little boat with, you know, undrinkable water, around you, and the scary part isn't really scary. But the happy part is like super creepy, or was super creepy, because the beings are animatronic. They're falling apart. Sometimes their metal skeletons are showing through, and it's just a creepy, uncanny experience.
It's like an old Southern lady in an antebellum gown, animatronic.
Yeah.
And then you go into the scary part, and there was a big old sheriff. Like, it's very much like Dukes of Hazzard kind of. And he's like, "Don't go down there." It's good stuff.
So there's something I would like to hear for any of our local or Atlanta-based listeners, or anyone who's traveled there. Let me know what it's like now, because I don't actually want to go. I just want to hear what it's like.
I know.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky, so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
All right, let me see here. Arnie, do you have something for me? Oh, thank you. All right, we had a good amount of emails about word aversion, because everybody had an opinion about it. Either they didn't have a word aversion, or they did, and they shared it with us, and it was really interesting.
This was the episode that you and Allison Lattermilk did while I was away, and I have to say, it was a great episode, and it was interesting for me to get to listen to stuff to blow your mind and not know what was going to happen.
Right, because you didn't have any sort of like, I don't have an outline on this.
Yeah, I didn't have an outline.
I don't know what those crazy kids are going to cover.
Yeah, So it was a really cool episode.
Thanks. Well, thank you very much. Well, this one is from Nando, and Nando says, I've been a listener for a while. I was listening to the word aversion episode, and even though I do not have a word aversion, I do have a word that I love saying, because we also talked about words that we are attracted to. And that word being the word mulch.
Mulch.
Mulch. I don't go around all day saying it, but I do enjoy it a lot. It is not only fun to hear, but it also feels good in my mouth. We talked about that in the podcast, too. Like, there's a certain sort of satisfaction of mulch. It's almost like having marbles mulch in your mouth. I think that it's the ch sound that makes it so appealing to me. Anyway, love the show. Keep up the good work. All right, and this one is from Chris. Says, hey, Robert and Julie finally caught up on all the podcasts. Just want to say that the Allison episode on word aversion was excellent and that she and Julie did a great job while Robert is away. My weird word aversion, kamikaze. A good word, but I thought it was pronounced differently as a kid, and when I found out the correct way, I became annoyed. To this day, I tend to cringe whenever I see it. Oh, it haunts me. Keep up the awesome work. Sorry for using awesome. We talked about that as being one of the words. Yeah. That kept landing on the list.
Yeah, because awesome is, like the word love, is far overused. And so when we actually encounter something or imagine something that is awe-inspiring, that is awesome in a grander sense, the word fails to
encompass
it.
Yeah, you're like, I can't use that word. That's really the appropriate word, but now it's been watered down and I have nothing.
Like an angel of the Lord like steps out of a UFO and starts handing out Twinkies and then splits the earth. In half, like that's an awesome sight, but you can't say it's awesome because you already said that the cup of coffee you had earlier in the day was awesome.
And now that you've had this paranormal Twinkie episode, you just can't put the two in the same category.
I can definitely relate with her about the whole pronunciation thing because there have been words in the past where like I grew up saying them weird or even like for a very brief time. Like I remember when I first read Jurassic Park, I didn't know it was pronounced Velociraptor, and I think I said Velociraptor, and then it was corrected on it, and it's like, I don't know, it was like in junior high, or not even quite junior high, but still, the word Velociraptor, I'll remember, like, the pain of having to be corrected on its pronunciation.
Yeah, I'm still angry at detritus.
Yeah.
I want it to be detritus.
Yeah.
It just feels like it should be, but I'm very annoyed with the word as well. Got one more on word aversion. This is from Francis. I was so surprised to see your word aversion podcast today. I had no idea there were others like me. There are. I never bring word aversion up in conversation because of the natural follow-up question. What words? And I don't want to say them. They are, for the most part, completely normal, everyday words that don't describe body parts or anything disgusting. But when I hear someone use one, it stops me completely. I have to digest what I just heard, consider the word. It takes me a while to recover. The most mild one that I'm willing to write down is purse. Even that gave me a chill, and that is the most mild of all the words that I don't say. I wish I could do the sentence thing. This was, we invited people to create their own sentences of words that were word aversive. But it would take me a long time to recover. I appreciated your sentence in the show, though some of the words, one in particular, is on my list, and so it made me shiver to hear it. This whole word thing is so ridiculous. My husband thinks I'm crazy, but it's very real, and I can't seem to flip that switch off. So in the meantime, I just speak in awkward sentences to avoid saying the bad words. Sometimes very awkward sentences. Thanks for the great show. I listened intently and was really interested in learning more about this word aversion thing. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Francis. That, I mean, I sort of understand that there are certain trigger words, and you don't want to say it. And so there are certain words that I sometimes are just trepidatious about, and I end up having some sort of word salad coming out of my mouth. So I can sort of understand from a limited perspective.
Speaking of which, trepidatious, great word.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
I also like, there are a lot of great words I like, but
what's your most favorite?
I don't know. Like, I was just thinking gargantuan is a great word.
Yeah.
Golgotha. Like, anything, like, which remembering that one stemmed from the other one, like any kind of word that has a kind of a rolling cadence to it, I really like.
I really like Calyptian.
Calyptian? Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
That's mainly because it means well-formed buttocks. What other word could express such a sentiment?
It reminds me, Cyclopean, I really like.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. But I don't know if it's really a word aversion or just an aversion to often our reluctance or inability to fully describe smells.
Mm-hmm.
And I've mentioned this before. I tend to dislike people saying something stinks, especially in reference to food. mm-hmm. and the reference to cheeses that stink, quote unquote stink, if they say a stinky cheese, mm-hmm. like that tends to get to me because I feel like that's, you're describing food, you're describing something that doesn't, I mean, stink is just such a, it's a broadly applied word that doesn't actually convey any meaning. Like, and I think we should use, we should have a better vocabulary for smells. And, and if we're going to talk about cheeses, especially in the, if there are children around and you know, you want to foster an idea that all foods should at least be tried, then maybe that cheese is not so much stinky as it is, you know, aromatic or pungent.
Okay, you need to team up strong. With the odor artist, Cecil Tolas, yes. first of all.
Yeah, she's very much of the same mindset.
So, second, you're pinning down a usage thing, but is there one word that just chills you to the marrow?
Oh.
Okay, what about vomit?
I tend to like vomit.
How could you love vomit? That shows up on all the lists.
I don't like vomiting, and I don't like the substance of vomit, but it's a V word, and it rhymes with comet. It has a very, like...
It does have the plosive consonants going for it.
One of my favorite fictional names, is in Brian McNaughton's book, Throne of Bones, there's a character, it's the king of the ghouls, and his name is Vomicron Noxus. So I love that name because it's taking vomit and it's taking noxious and it's kind of twisting the words around and creating this new word.
Kron for Kronos in it as well?
Yeah, there's a sense of that as well. Yeah. You know, sort of an ancient and godly stature to it. So I tend to really like fake words and fake names in fantasy and science fiction when they're well crafted, not when they're just sort of, mindless Dungeons and Dragons sort of word salad where you just call, you know, some sort of vaguely Tolkien-esque, elf name or something. But I really have a hard time thinking of any word that I dislike just for the sake of the word. Maybe if I think about it, I'll share it in a future podcast episode.
But so you don't have a problem with moist?
It's not my go-to word, and I know that it annoys enough people that I would probably not use it. Like, okay. It's not really in my satchel of words, but it doesn't bother me.
Okay. All right, well, we should probably wrap up because I need to go tend to this moist crevice. Nothing?
Well, I know that you're using words you dislike in a sentence. So
I thought I saw you wince.
Yeah. Well, maybe a little bit. But still, it's not a visceral reaction. So I'm going to have to think. Just going to have to be aware of myself, listen, and find that word that bothers me.
In the meantime, I'll try to drop as many.
Drop as many. As drop
possible.
The whole list at me.
Okay.
In one sentence, if possible.
I know what I'm doing this week.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, there you go, Arnold. Do you feel better? Yeah. Feel a little more balanced, a little more healthy. Well, that's great. We'll have to do this more often, and maybe even at the end of podcast episodes. And as for the rest of you, if you want to get in touch with us as well, you can find us online at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's the mothership. That's where everything can be found, from our podcasts and our videos and our blog posts to links to our various social media accounts, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're on YouTube as Mind Stuff Show. And Julie, if they want to send us a good old-fashioned email, how do they go about that?
Oh, it's very easy. All you have to do is compose an email, and then in the to area, the to field, you just put in stufftoblowyourmind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.